You're listening to Kraken Fancast. Go Kraken! The podcast for Seattle Kraken fans. Go Kraken! By Seattle Kraken fans.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Kraken Fancast. I'm your host, Chris Porter. I'm here with my colleague, Jim Cockrell, and we'll be talking a lot of Seattle Kraken hockey talk. Before we start, we want to give big thanks to our sponsor, the Angry Beaver, Seattle's number one hockey theme bar, located in the Greenwood neighborhood of Seattle. All right. Since our previous episode, there have been four games, which turned out to be quite a good run for the team as they won three of these recent ones, including two on the road against conference opponents. Very important for playoff implications for them to just even stay in the conversation. They need these. So that was great to see. I mentioned earlier that this is a very important stretch for the playoff contention, and it was nice to see the Kraken move forward on a mostly positive note. We also have some big trade news, which we'll get to in a bit. But first, let's take a little look at these past few games, starting off with a game that was a kind of a finisher of a home stint for the Kraken, a game against Sidney Crosby and the Pittsburgh Penguins. This one turned into a really exceptional game for goalie Philip Grubauer, as he made 33 saves and notched a shutout as the Kraken won this one 2-0. It was actually his first shutout of the season, 21st career one. Oliver Bjorkstrand, who's getting hot lately he got a goal in the first with assists by Alex Winberg and Will Borgen. And Alex Winberg helped seal the deal in the third period with a power play goal. Kyler Yamamoto and Eli Tolvanen with the assists on that score. Jim, you and I were there watching that game together. That was a fun one. I mean, not one that, you know, it was a close one. I mean, it was kind of, you know, it was so low scoring there. I remember you next to me thinking this is kind of an odd game.
I did. I was reviewing the last four games and I kept coming back to that Pitt game that we were at. And I remember saying to you, it just felt weird sitting there, because remember that first period, they were totally out shooting us like 18-8 in that first period or something. And you and I were saying, this is not good. But at the same time, Tristan down at the other end, Jari's cold and it's going to happen. And sure enough, that happened. Right. And we both like, yep, see, there it is. The old stat. Right. And it's, even though, you know, they outshot us overall 33-28, it still had that weird vibe about it, but it was a pretty green card game regardless, as far as, you know, possession and quality chances, and both tendies played well, but obviously Philip getting that, and it surprised me that that was his first shutout. I guess I wasn't thinking about that, even though I had the injury there for the long period. But yeah, solid game from him, obviously. A lot of high danger stuff too. Bjorkstrand, that started his 3 and 4, you know, he's getting hot again. We can go ahead and say that.
Yep.
And then Winnie probably had his best game of the year. He was 1-1 in 2 points, and just, you know, I see.
Yeah, nice to show off for other teams, and we'll explain what that means.
Yeah, no, like seriously, and we all know scouts have been in the building pretty heavily.
Oh yes, that has been reported.
So, and it was a dirty paint goal, and then it was just a nice game. Borgen had another good game, and I thought Pitt played pretty well, even keeping us to the outside, but we were able to pull that game off thanks to pretty much Grubby, you know.
Yeah, Grubby, nice to see him bouncing back. He's been, this was part of a long run for him, you know, playing in goal starting. So interesting to see that after a long stint with Joey DeCord in a lot of games. So nice win there. Next game was against a, you know, tougher opponent, much tougher contest against the Oilers in Edmonton. Pretty even game as far as the shots on goal were concerned, and even some other stats were concerned, but arguably, I don't know, to me, felt that Edmonton had more control in this game, particularly with the help of the goalie Stuart Skinner. He had plenty of great saves, and was a big part of their win. All it resulted in a victory for Edmonton by the score of 2-1. Eli Tolvanen got the lone goal, lone Kraken goal, that is, in the third period, a power play goal. It was his 15th of the season. Grubauer in net again, stopping 22 shots that night. you know, good game. Could have gone either way, I suppose. But I just didn't have a great feeling while I'm watching it. I'm thinking I was actually kind of surprised Edmonton didn't pull further ahead.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I have this as a green card loss, and I don't think we've had one this year. I know that it was a 50-50 game on paper, but everything we did, other than Skinner, was absolutely standing on his head. And Edmonton and everybody knows it, right? He was pretty amazing. It was a stealing game for him, for sure. Mm. One thing I noticed, Yams was all over the place that game, had a really good game. And that, you know, just watching McDavid and Draisaitl, passing
had a great game.
The passing that they're doing these days is so insane. You know, just it's like they're doing stuff that nobody else will attempt because they can't, right? And it just blows me away. You just appreciate it. I saw it again last night in Boston's game against the same deal. Tolvi got his 15th, which was cool. It's a kind of an ugly tip-in pinball five-hole thing. But, you know, that's what it's going to take against Skinner when he's that hot. And late power play pressure there that just didn't quite get it. And, you know, came right down to the wire, right down to those last 7 seconds, I remember. But
yeah, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if it went overtime, too, though.
Exactly.
On the other side, even though I was feeling a little nervous in this game. And, you know, every game, and I'll mention it again a little later after the Winnipeg game, every game is important from here on out. And, you know, especially against a division opponent. I agree. Even though I was feeling because Skinner was so on fire, and I'm just Draisaitl, McDavid, and Nurse, any of these guys are going to kind of turn it on. And, you know, credit to the Kraken D for keeping it a close game. And, making it interesting at the end.
A couple of good other stats here that Edmonton blocked 21 shots on top of that.
Yeah, a lot of blocks. Saw that. That was
it. And, you know, the Kraken had 14 takeaways, which is pretty darn high in that game, against a high-quality club, which is a stat that sticks out that kind of surprised me, and grew with the 9-17 for the night. So that's a good game, really good game. You know, that's the thing. Of all four of these games, this is probably the best solid efforts straight up all year as far as consistent play. So
yeah, although, you know, the next game was two games from the Winnipeg game, but which we'll get to, that was a pretty sweet game, I would say too.
Yeah.
but I hear what you're saying. Next game, gee, actually want to skip this game. This one was probably the one we could talk about the longest. Quite a bit of a nasty and chippy game against another division rival, that being the Calgary Flames, and that was happening in Calgary. Seattle won this one 4-2, a big and very important win. And they won despite the Flames having quite a few more shots on goal, not in the first period. The Kraken were kind of handily, you know, way shooting a lot more in that first period, but later on Calgary came storming back. But, Calgary really played a very physical game against Seattle. And that physicality was particularly evident in the play of Calgary forward Martin Pospisil. After a hard hit on Adam Larsson in the first period, which was not a penalty, but a lot of people took exception of it. And Ty Cartier being one of them, he later picked a fight with Pospisil. It was kind of all Ty throwing a lot of hard punches on him. Some say Pospisil turtled in that one. I don't know. But, interestingly, though, that wasn't the end of the Pospisil story in this game. In the third period, and this was the real serious thing, he injured Vince Dunn, checking him very hard from behind at the 13:41 mark of that period. Dunn left the game injured. Pospisil was charged with a major penalty and a game misconduct. And we were all wondering what would happen. Is there going to be a suspension? What's going to happen here? Meanwhile, though, there's a game to keep playing. And, Kraken kept scoring some goals. It was quite a good thing. You know, they had Jacob Markstrom's number, or some of them did. Yanni Gord, Oliver Bjorkstrand, Adam Larsson, and Jared McCann getting the goals in that one. It was McCann's 26th goal at that point. in the season, and shorthanded one at that. Shorthanded one in the boot. I love shorties, as you know, Jim. So that was particularly fun to watch. And I will add, before getting your commentary, Jim, we got word a couple of days later that the Calgary forward Martin Pospisil has been suspended for 3 games without pay for boarding Vince Dunn. And that came down from the National Hockey League's Department of Player Safety. So he did get a little more than a slap on the wrist, although I'm sure some think it should be more. But thoughts on that game? It was a good win. It was a really big win, for sure.
Well, I'll tell you what, that looking at my notes on this page are about as crazy as that game was. There's a lot of red, a lot of green, a lot of scribbling going on here. And I will tell you, at the header, it says official hate rivalry.
Yes.
So we can actually say now this is our own division hate rivalry 3 years into our existence. So let's take it. It was also,
I'd say, more than Colorado now.
Yeah, I don't want to. I don't even think.
Well, the Colorado, you know, one got it because of Mocker and everything last
year. Yeah, which is overplayed.
This Mangiapane and some other things.
No, this is full on
growing with Calgary.
Yeah, this has been going on for a while now.
Right.
And that's fine. Everybody knows it's our rivalry. They know it too. It's great. And I know people get really emotional in this game. I kind of did, but I was like, wow, the X is on fire tonight, to the point where I almost had to walk away. No, I'm serious. Another note, that was 100th franchise win, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, that was right. I'm glad you brought that up. I forgot about that.
Yeah. So the thing is like, we got the first goal early, Gord, right? And there was some good dominating pressure in the first period. And then they flipped it on the second period on us on the adjustment. That's when it started getting really chippy. It was almost like payback time after the non-call on Larson, which, by the way, I don't think that was a penalty. I think that's fine, the first one. I can go into that all you want if you want. But the second period was definitely them. And then, you know, coming back in the third when you have to and doing it right. And McCann with that shorty, right? That was a beauty. That was the start of something. He's putting the team on his back, it seems like, here lately. And those 2 big kills late were huge. So they're just, it was just a good, crazy, emotional game. What I don't like in the game was, you know, after the situation with Dunn and Provisil, is the Beniers having to step into the scrum and the Karche on the first one having to get in. You know, what is going on with Alexiak? This guy has got to step. I don't care if it's a shift later or two.
He takes up some space. I know he does that.
Oh my God.
I know. And then very quiet.
Very quiet. And then Borgen, we all know we love, and we know he's got really hard knuckles. I want to see him step in. I don't want guys. Nobody should expect, you know, Beniers to go in, or even Karche, if he's power forward now, whatever he is. We don't need busted knuckles on snipers. So I don't know what the hell's going on with this team when it comes to that. And that goes right to the top, obviously. But it was nice to see Larson get that payback goal after the fact, right? So just a wild game, a fun game, ugly game. I'm all for it. We don't play him again until next year, so that'll be interesting. Maybe by then, Mr. Melanson will be up. And maybe he can get a little dirty.
Oh, yeah. There are some youngins on their way up for sure. And that would be interesting. One of your favorites, of course. All right. Well, anyway, that was a good win. So 2 out of 3. Can they make it 3 out of 4? Next up, the Winnipeg Jets. Joey DeCord back in the net after a relatively long stint on the bench. Seems that Hextall will just ride with, you know, the hot goalie for a while until he has to switch it up. And this, oh man, this was a real sweet win for Seattle. They won 4-3. You know, backing up a second, I mean, the Jets have been very successful so far this season, one of the best teams. So it looked like a very tough task for the Kraken, especially having to, you know, play them in Winnipeg. But they didn't seem intimidated in the least. This team knows every game from here on out is important, as Andrei Burakovsky said in one of the interviews. And it was really, really great to see that the team really stepped up in this one. As I said, they won 4-3. It was a real back and forth affair. They easily could have gone into overtime. It could have gone to either team. I'm actually kind of surprised it didn't go into overtime. Schultz, McCann, Tatar, and Burakovsky with the goals in this one. Andre having a really sweet shot. I mean, that was just a nice pass, boom. Just one of those shots. I don't see the Kraken getting many goals from those type of plays. It feels like it was, you know, just a real sweet slap shot to break the tie. And it was near the end of the third period, near the end of the game at 17-21. But you know, there's still some time. You know, Winnipeg pulls their goalie, and then there's a penalty, and you know, so they're extra shorthanded. The Kraken, that is, are extra shorthanded. And Joey DeCord, oh, he made a fantastic save near the end of the game. He saved with even out of his stick. He kind of lost the handle of his stick and had to do it with you know, his arm or blocker or something. You know, I don't know. It was a fantastic save, and that saved it for the Kraken. That they were able to hold on to a really close win. Joey had 30 saves in the game. You know, he let in three, but you know, he stopped a lot. I think had a solid game. It's just, there were some great shots against him, and Winnipeg's a fine team. And that was a big win for the Kraken. So they win three out of the last four on that one.
Yeah. I got a lot to say about that game. Before I move on though, I did miss to say a couple notes about the last game I want to get out, because it's important. Grew had 946 in that Calgary game. He was incredible. Yep. And Dunn and Larson were +4 and +3. I just want to get that out of there. Yep. This Winnipeg game. All right. This is a greenie. And this potentially could be the biggest win of the year to this point.
I felt that way too. Yeah.
Yeah. It just, because we know who we were playing, right? Top team Central all year long. We know how good they are. We know how good the goaltending is with Hellebuck, all this stuff, right? And so going in, you're thinking, oh shit, we need all the points we can get, right? And on paper, God, you're thinking, oh, we're probably gonna drop this one, whatever. Full effort, right? And there's some lines or some shakeups in the D because of the injury to Dunn. Dumo and Larson were paired up, which was interesting. And then Evans with Schultz coming in. And then Belly was in on four line center. So that was his first go for a while, right? Good to see. Well, man, you're right. There was 14 shots on Joey in the first. I mean, he was doing it, right? And then the surprise goal, isn't every goal that Schultz gets to me is a surprise goal, it seemed like, right? Like, oh, I wasn't expecting that one. You never knew, but he's got like six goals, right? So what can you say for a 6D, right? McCann, back-to-back shorties, almost identical shots, right? Then that when he came in, it was a double turnaround effort. It foiled the first time, came right back around. And I don't know if you've noticed this, but they're almost identical. He's coming down with speed, and he's letting that shot go from a little bit of a distance. And it's almost so much authority. Like, I know exactly what this is going, and this is going to be a goal. And both nights were exactly the same like that. It's just impressive with that shot of his. You know, I'm going to bring up the Lowry thing. So when Lowry got that goal, I thought to myself,
Adam Lowry.
Lowry. Yeah, he's a great player, by the way. A great all-around power forward guy, smart. And, you know, son of our assistant coach on the bench. Dave, and I thought to myself, when Adam scores, does Dave just like say fuck on the bench, or what, you know, mumble it, or what's going on?
Must be
that?
Torn a bit.
Yeah, it's like a little celebration. No, I can't do that. Whatever. It's just kind of funny. Anyway, that's the kind of stuff that goes through my mind when I'm watching a game. Actually, Tatar finally getting back on, right? He'd been
Dry. On the little side there for like about 10 games or something.
Yeah, it was a nice little inside tip, a lot of almost Joe-ish like. And then Berkey, like you said, with that shot late, a little over 2 minutes left or something. And boy, could you almost see the relief in him when he scored, or the whole team, like a sigh? It was just crazy, wasn't it?
You could see they were just so extra elated. I mean, they're elated in any goal, but that one was
oh my god. I mean, think about it. How many chances has that guy had in the last whatever when he's not injured playing? You know, it's crazy.
And it was such an important goal.
Yes, it was huge. It was like, okay, that's the cushion we need. A guy that had a great game, Lars, with 7 huge blocks. Really, really underrated what he was doing through the whole night. And then Yanni, the way he was playing in those last 2.5 minutes to save the game, right? You could see the sacrifice he was making on his plays. Well, in fact, didn't he get a penalty there at the end? Or yeah,
yes, the very end. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was part of his full on effort, doing everything to not let a goal happen. Just a great game, you know, outshot, but still played incredibly well. McCann, what can you say? He's a star of the game. Evan logged 18 and a half minutes, which is pretty good. I know he's 5-6 pairing, but that's still pretty good in a big game like that. I think he had an assist too, by the way. Block shots 20, which is, you know, fairly impressive. And then hits that we were heavy hitting in that one, I think, because we had to, because they were coming around the corner pretty hard. So, and then
Get back to you, you said one. Yeah, Riker got the one of the assists on the
Burkowski
goal.
Yeah. And then Joey, the 909-29-32. So, like I said, if you were to wrap up these four games, I feel like, you know, it was three wins, one loss, but it seemed like that was the best they played in a run as far as full on effort, you know, giving it all, win or lose. I thought they were sticking to the structure well. I thought they weren't doing too much stupid, you know, mistakes or anything. I thought they were all on the desperate hockey, basically, we were watching, and it was coming through, you know, in a time you need to be with what's going on. And that's probably going to lead you right to the standings, isn't it, Chris?
It will. Well, we can bring that right to the stands as of this recording. Yeah. I mean, Seattle's behind, but they, you know, inching a little bit back. Unfortunately, you know, the Nashville Predators have been on such a roll that, you know, they've won 8 of the last 10.
God.
And they've got the second. It's interesting. It's a three-way tie here. I mean, as far as points are concerned, I mean, there are tiebreakers here. But LA Kings, Vegas Golden Knights, and Nashville Predators all have 73 points. Mm. I don't think nobody's going to catch up to Vancouver with 87 or the Oilers even with 78. But that's another little bunch up there, those three teams. And then there's a little drop-off of 6 points, 3 games essentially. And then you got the Blues and Kraken both at 67 points, and then a little drop off of the Flames 65, Minnesota 64. So, but that's nice. You know, I mean, the Kraken, you know, 7-2-1 in their last 10 games. So that'll keep you in the mix. Yep. So that's great. You know, the thing is, this is great. They're playing some decent hockey lately, but they need help. They need, you know, one of these teams, somebody, LA, Nashville, or Vegas, somebody needs to come back down to earth a bit. And that's a tall order, probably.
Yeah. I'm beginning to wonder now if Nashville will surpass LA, you know.
I'm feeling it. They're playing better hockey, I think, you know, in general right now.
Yeah, so
that
no doubt.
Surprise me. LA's been a little inconsistent, but I mean, good. But I wonder. It just they've been on such a tear. But you know, we've got, I don't have it in front of me, but what, you know, 20-22 games left. I mean, a lot can happen mathematically. They're still very much in it. So you know, hoping for the best here. You know, speaking of this, you know, Winnipeg game, of course, they were missing a guy. Sometimes, you know, when some guys sit, they sit for a lot of reasons, Jim, right? But sometimes yeah. They sit because they're going to get traded.
Two games. Yeah.
Oh, 2 games. That's right. He wasn't in the Calgary game. But yeah, that's right. Yeah. You know, it's been rumored. We've talked about it numerous times on this podcast. So no one really is shocked, or they shouldn't be. But Alex Wennberg, you know, a favorite of a good amount of fans, and you know, he's been with the Kraken for a while, done well, and but you know, well enough to get traded. You know, another team, a very good team, the New York Rangers, wanted him. They acquired forward Alex Winberg from the Seattle Kraken for a second round pick in 2024 NHL draft and a conditional fourth round pick in the 2025 NHL draft. So Winnie, thanks for all the great memories and all, but you're a New York Ranger now who have a good, decent chance to go far. They're quite a good team this year.
Yeah, on paper, that they look as good as they have for the last 20 years.
You know what I mean? So why would they want Winberg? Do they need
some for one thing, they've got some injuries going on. They've lost a couple wingers and this and that. And they're a little bit desperate on the bottom six. And he fits a third line center situation. You know, I looked, ever since I heard the Winnie rumors, I don't know, you can go back a couple weeks at least about New York. I was looking at their roster thinking, you know, he would probably work there pretty well, like better than he does here. On, you know, even though he's in a second line capacity here, but he would be third there. Whether he's backfilling the injuries that are taking place right now as a rental or whatever, I think he will work with the talent around him no matter what, because of his game is defensive structured. He can play PK. He can even pop on the PP. I think it would actually work. So it was funny because I was reading, trying to get the vibe of people over there the last couple of days, and there was a lot of fans, you know, talking on the X and stuff about, like, I don't know, you know, the rumor is we're going to have to give up too much for him. And either they weren't familiar with him or his game, or they just didn't want to give up much. And, you know, there was people locally here thinking, well, not many, but some people were like, don't do anything unless you can't get a first. Well, you're never going to get a first for him. I was surprised they were able to get kind of a second and a fourth. I was thinking more like two and then maybe even later than that, or maybe even a three and something four. I don't know, or a prospect swap or something weird, right? Or, and then I started realizing that last 24 hours that it's probably going to be a three-way, which it turned out to be. And, you know, straight up, I think we got the most we could possibly get out of him. I think that's as high as we can go. So I have no problems with when it went down there. You retain 50%. It's fine. We'll be fine. I'm not worried about it. He's 29 years old. What are you going to do after that if you decide to hang out? It's just kind of like what's going on with Ebbs right now, too. With the
now, speaking of another rumor, you know, we were hearing Ebbs, and then I kind of wasn't hearing as much, and certainly not as much chatter about as we did about Winberg. But what's the latest you heard about that?
Frank Cervelli spoke. You know, he's kind of like the godfather of that stuff, it seems like. The rumor was Kraken had offered 2 years at 4.5, which is, you know, a little reduction and on salary. And Ebbs' agent wanted three. He loves it here. We know that. And the latest is they don't want to do that. So it sounds like he'll be available by Friday's deadline. So we need to think about that now, which means freeing up that salary, if that's the case, and shopping. Because, you know, you lost a winger in a top six role. And there are players out there that can backfill that. There's also players that have been picked up in the last day, centers and things. But as some of the GMs had said, that the market was incredibly high for, you know, centers and everything. It's higher than they can recall. Barry Trotz was commenting on that. And they said it's pretty ridiculous and out of control, setting the market. So we'll just have to see. You know, Friday we'll know if we have to go out and get somebody, because you're not going to lose two of your top six without some backfill of a player of at least one. And it's probably going to be one. And I kind of know who I want, but, you know, he's probably going to get some high interest from a lot of clubs. He seems to be the miss. I'd be into Tyler Toffoli.
Okay.
But the thing about him, he's such an interesting career because he has just been moved around like crazy. If for kind of, I think he's 20, no, what is he? 31. I can't remember. I think he's 31. Anyway, his last 5 years have just been like whirlwind of travel. And I always thought, man, it seems like that guy could settle down. He's at $4.5 million right now, which is, in my opinion, a bargain for what he can do.
31 years old.
Okay.
He did play quite a while, and I thought with L.A., but
Right. But that was
after L.A. It's been like 14, short stint with Vancouver, Montreal, Calgary, and New Jersey most recently.
He's deadline deal guy. And it seems kind of weird to me that that's been going on kind of before, 27, 28 years old. I mean, he won two cups going back to 12, 13 with the Kings, 12, 14, actually. And he's just kind of moved around. It's crazy to me. But if it gets down to it, I would take him in a heartbeat, you're going to have to sign a deal and probably get some term going here. And it might involve a star or a bigger player in your team or your system. But I don't know. There's players I'd look at. You're going to have to if you lose Ebbs.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure.
Which reminds me too. People were already saying, well, okay, let's bring up, because of a Wimber going away. Now we can bring up Wright. Okay. Well, you don't want to. And that's already been public noticed by Ronnie. That's not happening because you don't want to blow that ELC with the amount of games he's played. And I think he only has five more games to hit into that. So they won't even waste that with him. Yeah. Entry level contract.
Okay. Just want
to sorry about that. Because he's got three in his belt, which means he can get six more or something. I can't remember what his numbers are. Bottom line is they don't want to push that envelope. They want to save it so they don't have to pay out and get a short year out of them.
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Looking at some of these other trades, I mean, we'll see and hear about more, but it was interesting. Edmonton Oilers acquire forwards Adam Henrik, Sam Carrick, onside draft choice goalie Ty Taylor, and a seventh round pick from in a three-team trade with Anaheim Ducks and Tampa Bay Lightning. And then the other teams, got various picks and everything. So Edmonton trying to bolster as well. They probably should. Colorado, they acquired forward Casey Mittelstadt from the Buffalo Sabres for defenseman Bowen Byram. I don't know what that one means.
That's a kind of a surpriser there. It's in a way.
That you're surprised that Mittelstadt?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think they're looking at Mittelstadt, and Byron is like, he had some hot shot things going on this year, and I think like they're going to bank on him in the future as over Mittelstadt. So it's kind of an interesting deal there.
Byron, I remember watching him a bit. Colorado would play the crack and look good. But the Avalanche, they did a lot of stuff. Then they also seemed to acquire defenseman Sean Walker and a fifth round pick from the Flyers for Ryan Johansson and a conditional first round pick. And then Vladimir Tarasenko in the news too. Florida Panthers acquiring him, the forward from the Ottawa Senators, for a conditional fourth round pick and a third round pick in 2025. God, he was like talked about as such a stud 2-3 years ago, and now he only gets a fourth rounder.
Who knows? Well, remember he had those injury issues that were kind of a spec about 4 years ago as well too, but he seemed to override those. And he is getting later in his career, but look at that. You go to Florida, who's already looking good for a push.
Yeah.
With a big sniper on the wing there. Holy smokes.
That could be trouble. Yeah. Those East teams, Boston Rangers, look out on that one. Here's one that was kind of interesting to me, and I thought was a nice pickup. The Vegas Golden Knights acquiring forward Anthony Mantha from the Washington Capitals for a second round pick. I've seen Mantha play some fine games, and Vegas, obviously very decent team and bolstering there. I guess that was it of the most recent ones. And just 3-4 days before that, the New Jersey Devils, who, fired their coach Lindy Ruff. So I almost feel like they're just kind of doing things for next year at this point. But they acquired defenseman Curtis McDermott from the Colorado Avalanche for forward prospect Zakhar Bardakov in a seventh round pick for the 2024 draft. So Colorado busy in this so far in all these trades. But some interesting ones there. How much they mean, we'll see.
A lot of Edmonton folks are hoping for that Ebbs to Edmonton as well. They're looking at that. So who knows?
Yeah.
He would do well on a team that's got to run. He'd be the perfect pickup for a team that's got to run.
That's like going full circle in his life there.
I know. It's so weird.
Started with the Oilers, for those who don't know.
Yeah.
In fact, I have such a soft spot. You and I used to talk about this years ago when NHL Network had this series. Well, they've done them different ones. They've done them with Bruins and I think one other team, but they had one called Oil Change. And that was back in the very lean years of the Oilers when they got this little stud kid, Taylor Hall. It was his first, it was his rookie year. And Jordan Eberle wasn't, you know, much older. And, you know, God, who are the hosts that had? Nikolai Hobby-Bulin was still a goalie, I think, although he was sort of on his way out. They were trying to get, what was that kid's name? Played for, it'll come to me. But anyway, it was really fascinating. It was like the team was such a mess in a way, and they were trying to rebuild, and it was really fascinating to watch that. But I remember Eberle was very prominent in that series. So that's how I knew it. I heard about Jordan Eberle, you know, with Islanders, and then I'm like, gosh, that's a flashback to that great series. So it would be interesting if he ended up back there. But well, anyway, Ebs, you know, I love him on the Kraken, but you know, it's a business, and you know, and got to do what he's got to do. How old is he now?
He's 33.
So I think that's right. Yeah.
You know what? He's that's the exact same offer I would have made. No more than 2 years. No way. You know what I mean?
No, that's at, I think a totally reasonable offer.
Yeah, I mean, I would not go beyond that. I don't care. And I'm kind of surprised because I think he's making 5.5, right? So they only dropped $1 million. And it's kind of okay. He's making the bank
than that. I don't get it.
I know this late in your game. I mean, I know you want some security and all, but what happens if you end up playing in freaking someplace you don't like? Is it worth cashing out there at the end like that? I don't know. It doesn't matter. I like the guy too. I like him on the team. I know they like it here, the whole family, but it's like you said, it's a business. It's like crazy. And so many people are getting so emotionally beat up over everything that's going on. I'm like, guys, this shit's been going on for years, ever since the salary cap came into effect.
This is part of the game. And you could realize that, you know, and it's the case in a lot of sports. I mean, people, and this is, I suppose, a little sad. I mean, we grew up in an era where you would, you know, it was before, you know, all this free agent stuff or free agency stuff was relatively new. And you'd see these players and they'd play on one team for, 5-10 years, whatever, and you get to know them and love them and all that, and so it was a nice thing for fans, as long as your team was doing well, that is. But you know, there's that ripple in it. But yeah, Eberle, I just have memories of us talking about him. He's been a fine player for the Kraken, and I like him a bunch, but it can be a little streaky. I remember sometimes you and I are like kind of like what we were talking about, Tatar, you know, Eberle's been kind of quiet, you know. I remember us having numerous conversations.
Definitely.
And then he kind of goes on a run. Then okay, oh, he's back. You know, he's just I could be wrong. I don't have all the stats in front of me, but I get that impression sometimes. No. A little
this year for sure. That first half of the year, or not half, let's just say third. But he's heated it up here, definitely, probably more so than anybody other than McCann in the last, you know, solid month, maybe more, 6 weeks, whatever. And, you know, he's kind of the talk of the town, whether he's feeding apples or shooting the puck, or he's, you know what? These guys get hot when the scouts are looking, right?
Yeah, funny how that happens.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, when he has this great game, oh, wow, he's gone.
I think I'll just step it up a notch here.
Exactly, yeah. Maybe it's payday, man, or get on a Stanley Cup winning team. You're going to have to step it up. Hopefully they can keep it hot going forward here. They've got a 5-game homestand, which we know historically doesn't necessarily mean a great thing. I mean, sometimes Kraken have done better on the road than they do at home. We've seen that a lot. But anyway, nevertheless, it's a homestand. It would be great to get a lot of wins in front of your own fans, boys. So that's going to begin shortly after this broadcast. Kraken have a rematch with the Winnipeg Jets on Friday the 8th, then home games against Vegas, Washington, Nashville. That's an important one. Oh, boy.
All of them.
And then Buffalo, which is a team you should beat. They're all coming up before then. They have a bit of a break and then a short road trip that'll include games against Vegas and Arizona. So that's the next batch of games. It'll be interesting to see. We're getting down the wire. It's nice that they're still in it. You know, it's nice that we've got some competitive games here and then making it interesting. You know, I think both of us have been, and many, you know, we talked about it with John Barr and others, that we're feeling that Jesus is really late. If this was like maybe a month ago, I'd feel some more confidence. But right now, it feels like a playoff spot's a tall order, but we've seen crazier stuff. So, you know, they keep playing this way. That's all we can ask for them. You know, play your best hockey, boys, and let's make a run on it. So we'll see. Thanks, Jim, on all of that. And thanks to you all for listening. Keep in mind, we've got some t-shirts still. Go to clkrakenfancast.com, click on our shop link, and you'll be brought to our t-shirt page. Thanks to all who've purchased and proudly worn our wear. Remember, if you haven't already, join us on Facebook, Twitter/X. We're at Cast Kraken. We actually get a lot, I'd say, Jim, it'd be fair to say, like, Twitter/X is kind of our most engaged social media platform, but we do get a lot of people watching us on Instagram too. So keep us in mind there. This podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, and our very own website, SeattleKrakenFanCast.com. So thanks much for all that. We are grateful to all our supporters on Patreon. Check us out on patreon.com/KrakenFanCast if you'd like to help support what we do. We really, really appreciate it. It does cost some money to keep this thing going, and we've got some contributors, and we're very grateful for them. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Also, thank you, thank you, thank you to our wonderful producer, Jay Middleton. For Jim Cockrell and Jay, I'm Chris Porter. We thank you very much for tuning in. Maybe Nathan Gunderson will be back. He's been lost out in the sea of hockey, but we're going to try to reel him back in. So maybe Nathan next week. We'll see. He's doing okay. He's just got a lot on his plate right now, but cheers to Jim and Jay for joining me here, and we thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, we say,
go Kraken!